with the first pick.
Welcome back to the Daft on Draft podcast. I'm your co-host, Devin Jackson, and today I'm joined by Matt Valdovinos. Corey couldn't be with us. Unfortunately, he had some things to take care of, but Matt and I are here to hold down the fort and finish our talk on 2023 and start transitioning to 2024. Before we get started, man, Matt, how you doing today?
I'm doing good. I'm staying in New Mexico for the summer, so that's where I am. Made the flight down over this past weekend, and so had some technical difficulties, trying to get everything situated and working from my laptop. Finally, thank God the laptop already has the mic and the camera, so I don't have to worry too much about that. A little bit of a change of scenery and whatnot. I still got to figure out exactly, feel out where I'm going to record, where I'm going to work and everything like that. But, it's a good time. I'm excited to be here. The weather's gorgeous. It's warm. I'm going to get my tan going. I'm doing great. How about you?
Pretty good. I actually spent my time out on the West Coast this past week. Went to Vegas.
We're dripping. Really nice
appreciate it. Really nice to get away and take it all in, see the strip and everything. And got to see a bunch of R&B artists at the Lovers and Friends Festival. So Usher.
That's awesome.
Chris Brown and all of them. So it was cool to get away and not do anything football related, but by the end of the trip, I was like, all right, I gotta get back to it and get ready for 24. So speaking of draft classes, we're going to kind of put a bow on just the 2023 draft class as well. And like we talked about in the last episode where we, kind of talked about some of our favorite draft classes, some of our favorite picks, et cetera. This time around, we're going to do some similar to it, but continue to try and get away from just ranking them, all 32 teams, but more so picking out some of our favorite draft classes and ones that we think are going to produce early on in the 2023 season. And then towards the end, talk about some offensive rookie of the year, defensive rookie of the year picks and get into some 2024 talk. So Matt, why don't we go ahead and get started with you. And the topic that we had discussed about talking about some draft classes we think are going to have some early impacts on the 2023 NFL season.
Yeah, well, the first one that came to my mind was the Giants. And while I don't necessarily think I do love the Deontay Banks pick, but I don't necessarily love the value of everyone, specifically the Jalin Hyatt pick, which we'll talk about in a sec. But, my big thing for this is we're talking about the classes that are going to produce the most or the best production, give you the most in their first year. And to do that, I think you have to have drafted positions of major need immediately, things that are you needed help with going into 2023, not necessarily needs that might come on down the road. And so to me, when you're going into the draft, the Giants' three biggest needs were a wide receiver, an interior offensive lineman, and a cornerback who can do that man-to-man stuff and be like the leader of Wink Martindale's, sometimes that heavy cover zero, all in, man-on-man, Deontay Banks kind of fits that perfectly. You've got that interior offensive lineman in John Michael Schmitz, and then you go out and you get Jalin Hyatt to be that, wide receiver that they're lacking in talent for. And so I think it's really, really great that at least in terms of the positions they needed to be effective this year and guys that they needed to come in and produce, they knocked that out of the park, especially with all three of those. And, Saquon's not necessarily a super consistent and healthy guy. And there is an injury risk there at some points. And I think Eric Gray, their fourth round pick, if you get a tweaked Saquon ankle or anything like that, he's out a week, he's out a couple weeks. Eric Gray might automatically be vaulted into a starting role. So that's four potential starters you got just off your first four picks. So I think the Giants did a really, really good job of addressing that and getting guys who can produce in year one.
Yeah, the Giants had a interesting kind of, way of going and attacking the draft. A lot of people thought they were going to address interior offensive linemen early and kind of what they did and what they were able to recoup, I think, was impressive. But also the players and the potential that they can come in and produce immediately. So I'm going to go to another playoff team for my kind of class to pick, and I'm gonna go to the Buffalo Bills. And when I look at what they were able to do Obviously, you got Dalton Kincaid. He's going to be a guy I think that can contribute from day one. Feels like he's more of a just a general pass catcher and not just your typical tight end, a wide tight end, or even flex tight end. They're going to use him kind of all over the field. Obviously, they have Dawson Knox already and brought him back, but I think Kincaid is going to really boost their passing game in terms of attacking the middle of the field and being able to create mismatches. Osiris Torrence was another guy that can come in and compete immediately in the interior for Buffalo. They've had some issues in pass protection, specifically on that right side, right tackle as well. And while Torrence isn't the tackle necessarily, he immediately bolsters their running game, something that they've been trying to get back to and adds another dynamic to their offense. It's something that they've wanted to really instill and not just rely on Josh Allen, you know, with the vertical deep passing game. Dorian Williams, I think, was a sneaky good pick because obviously they lost Edmonds in free agency. But he's a guy that you can plug and play. He's really instinctual, can play on both passing and running downs. I don't think he's quite the same in terms of coverage as Edmonds brought, but I think he brings a better all-around game, and he's a bit undersized, but I think he's kind of the guy that they want in the middle of their defense and, you know, really helping their defense. And then you look at some of their day three picks. Nick Broeker is probably going to be a depth piece along that offensive line, but another guard/tackle type player. He played tackle and guard at Ole Miss, so he can provide depth. Alex Austin, I think, is going to be another depth piece potentially. He may not even make the roster this year, but someone to watch. And then Justin Shorter, we'll see kind of what comes of him in terms of what they do with him, but I think he certainly has the big body and athleticism to be a contributor down the road. But those first three picks to me, I think all three of those guys, Kincaid, Torrence, and Williams, I think all of them have a chance to start immediately and be a heavy contributor to a playoff team in Buffalo.
Yeah, and I think Torrance's pass protection got a little bit undersold throughout the process, especially towards the end. And I think he brings value to that downfield Buffalo passing attack too, and more than just the running game, which is good. Yeah, like you, I'm super interested in what they're going to do with Dalton Kincaid. If they're just going to big slot it. I mean, he gives you a nice variation, a different kind of skill set than Gabe Davis and Stephon Diggs and the other guys they have there. So I do like that a lot. And then, if I'm not mistaken, wasn't Justin Shorter like the number one wide receiver recruit? I always think about that whenever, like, just of course those guys always go. He moved around from like Penn State originally. And so, you know, those guys with huge talent who are always high profile athletes, I always like just taking flyers on them because you never know. But another class that I really, really like, and we talked about this on the last episode, probably just my favorite class overall, but the Cardinals, I'm going to continue to talk about them. Their first two picks are, you know, arguably the most important positions outside of quarterback, with Paris Johnson Jr. to be the left tackle of the future, and B.J. Ojulari to be, you know, explosive pass rusher, a guy who can kind of move everywhere, and Jonathan Gannon's defense, someone that, you know, a la Hassan Reddick, what he did in Philly last year, I think he can do a lot of that in Gannon's defense. And then their next two picks were another two, you know, their two third rounders were two high profile or high value positions in quarterback and wide receiver. We all know, we already talked about Garrett Williams, probably a higher pick if not for the ACL. I think it was wraps that he's going to be back by July, or is when he's expected to be clear. So decent chance. I think he's got a good chance to start across from Wilson in that Cardinals defense. And then we've all heard about the DeAndre Hopkins trade stuff. What could come about that? If he goes before the season, then Michael Wilson, your other third-round pick, has a chance to go be that kind of big-bodied receiver that they kind of lack in that room once Nook is gone. And so I think there's a chance that the Cardinals get a lot of production out of their class as well.
Yeah, the Cardinals, and we talked about quite a bit, they've had a really impressive class, just being able to not only get, you know, just obviously had a lot of picks, and could potentially have some early picks as well next year. But they're setting themselves up to still field a competitive team. It's going to be a really young team that's going to take a lot of lumps.
Yeah.
But I think.
And what if Clayton Tune beats out Colt McCoy, and then you're starting a rookie quarterback too? And that year one production is insane for a class. Even if Clayton Tune's not some, you know, long term starter, which no one expects him to be, if he's even playing eight games, and it's the first eight games of the rookie year, like that's a ton of production, or at least a ton of you know, snaps that a draft class is taking.
Yeah, I agree. It's certainly going to be interesting to watch for sure. And I'll kind of transition to another draft class that I think is a little bit interesting, especially with the first four or five picks. I have to go to the Dallas Cowboys. I think they could have some pretty solid, you know, contributors in year one. You look at a guy like Mozzie Smith. You don't expect him to be an every down guy, especially early on along that Dallas defensive front. But I think he can make an impact at least early on in the run game and kind of be that run stopper in the middle and kind of develop. Luke Shoemaker really interests me. That pick particularly, not only because of the tight ends that were still on the board when they picked him, but it seems like they picked him to be an early contributor. And I know, you know, they lost the top tight end in free agency, and he obviously feels a need. But I think he's going to bring some value in the run game specifically, too, in creating a numbers advantage in the interior. So that pick interested me because of kind of the twofold skill set he brings to the table. You look at DeMarvian Overshown. I think he's probably going to be a sub-package player, but I mean, we're talking about him and potentially Micah Parsons rushing on third downs as blitzers, and that's an enticing package to throw together. I don't expect him to be a full-time starter either, but I think he can bring kind of an interesting skill set that I don't want to say mirrors Micah Parsons, but kind of similar type of profile coming out in terms of range and what he's able to, how much ground he's able to cover as a non-traditional linebacker. Viliami Fehoko, to me, I think he's going to surprise some people in terms of how many snaps he ends up getting. Played both 3-tech and 5-tech at San Jose State. And you can move him around a little bit. He's not just a guy that's going to be a stand-up defensive end, not just be a 4-3 defensive end. I think he can play a little bit of 3-tech and 5-tech for them. And then depth-wise, you bring in Awesome Richards from North Carolina as well. I don't expect him to start either, but I think he can kind of bolster some of the depth issues that Dallas has on their offensive line. So to me, I think their class is a little bit more, I wouldn't say it's going to be ready tomorrow, but I think they may be, depending on injuries and just the people ahead of them, I could see them playing a little bit earlier than some people expect, especially like Overshown, Fehoko, Richards of that draft class.
Yeah, Dallas is super interesting to me because I think they kind of embody this like anti-Philadelphia draft philosophy where like Howie Roseman's very much like, we're going to take the top dude on the board. We're going to take the top dude on the consensus boards. And even if we don't really have a spot for them to play right now or we have a bunch of people ahead of them, they're the best player. Let's just put them here. You see it with like Jalen Carter. They already, you know, they have that defensive line depth. They're just going to add the best player. Nolan Smith, they have edge rush depth. They're just going to add the best player. And I think with Dallas, it's much more, we're going to draft players who we have a role for, who can play this role really well. And this role will complement all the other players on our roster. And I think they're very comfortable in just taking their guys that they've identified to do that well. I think Mozzie Smith, his impact is going to be significantly more than what you get out of the box score because it's going to create Micah Parsons and DeMarcus Lawrence plays. And I think it opens up guys like Canadian Bacon, Neville Gallimore to, I was like, I can think of it for a sec, and Osa Odejizua. Like there's guys on there who can really, really dominate in some one-on-one matchups who maybe aren't the best at holding into that, you know, stout defensive line, keeping other guys clean. And I think Mozzie immediately comes into that. I think Dallas's tight ends aren't the focal point of their passing attack, but Dak loves to dump it off if he sees that that's the, you know, I'm not going to go make a play down the field right now. We need to move the ball down, you know, kind of methodically. They like to just get the ball to the tight ends, let the tight ends go make a play up the field. Schumacher's got the kind of athletic traits that project towards that, and then they need to, you know, kind of secure that running game a little bit. And like you said, he adds to that. So I do think that the Cowboys, you know, kind of anti-Philly, get guys who some people are going to be like, oh, I can't believe Dallas took them. What are Mozzie Smith only had 2.5 sacks as a rookie or whatever, if he even gets that. But his, you know, impact could theoretically be, you know, greater than Jalen Carter's impact in Philly, even though I don't think either of us think that Mazi Smith is a comparable player to Jalen Carter as a prospect, just kind of the roles that they already have cut out for these guys, I think is important. And it's a good foundation that Dallas builds for them to have successful draft classes that they do have.
Yeah, for sure. And we talk about maybe having some honorable mentions. So you have any honorable mentions in terms of draft classes that you could produce sooner than we think?
Yeah, one of the ones I wanted to throw some love to was the Bears specifically, just because I think you've got, you know, instant Justin Fields protection with Darnell Wright. You're just going to plug and play him at right tackle. I think that defensive line had some major question marks. There weren't a ton of, like, NFL-level players there. You spend two of your first four picks in Jermaine Dexter and Zach Pickens. I think both of those guys can be – I think they do completely different things for a defensive line, which is kind of what you want. You kind of like – similar to a receiving core, you like having a defensive line, kind of like a basketball team, where one guy's really doing a great job eating up double teams and keeping other guys fresh and clean. One guy's dominating mismatches, can play inside, outside. So I really like that young tandem. And then I also like the fact that they brought in Tyreek Stevenson to play across Jalen Johnson. And then Roshon Johnson's a guy who I think we've all identified as that day three running back who's got a really, really good chance to just be a starting running back. We know Corey loves Tyler Scott. He's got a good chance to be that wide receiver four. And then Noah Sewell was a guy that a lot of people liked. Obviously, they went and signed a couple linebackers this year, so he probably doesn't play much this year, but that just the Bears class, I think, has a good chance of getting onto the field early. A lot of guys getting on the field early, and that being an up-and-coming team in the NFC.
For sure. I'm going to give some love to the Broncos. I think they're going to have a few guys that get on the field early. Got Marvin Mims Jr. You bring him in the second round. Drew Sanders, they're going to find a role for him and bring him in, whether it's you know, as a pass rusher, as a true linebacker. I'm very interested to see how early or in where does he fit on that Denver defense. They love their versatile you know, pass rushers. And then Riley Moss, I think I don't think right now there's a particular spot for him, but I think he's going to find and carve a role, maybe potentially as a nickel. Maybe they try him out at safety, but I think he's going to find a role on that defense. And JL Skinner is just my guy. I really think he's going to find, even if it's just special teams,
make plays, yeah,
early on, I think they're going to unleash him and allow him to make some plays. So I think Denver's draft class, they only have five players that they drafted, yeah. But I think the first three names especially have a nice chance of getting on the field and being an impact player.
Yeah, one of the really cool things I've taken after the draft, you know, watching all of the, you know, coaching press conferences and leading into the rookie mini camps and kind of digesting all of that information is that, like, the Broncos and Sean Payton specifically, like, are really big Marvin Mims guys. Like, it wasn't, all right, let's look at the board. All right, cool, Marvin Mims is there at the top. We kind of want a receiver. Like, it was like a Marvin Mims is that guy. This is who we wanted. This is what we wanted to come away with. A part of me makes me wonder about the Courtland Sutton and Jerry Jeudy relationship, but I think Mims is going to be your day one punt returner, day one wide receiver three. I think they're going to use him a lot. They're going to get him on the field a lot. And if Sean Payton's a huge fan of him, I think you've got a good opportunity to kind of guess that he's going to get a lot of touches early.
Sure. Now we're going to kind of switch gears and talk about offensive and defensive rookie of the year candidates. We'll start with defense first because offense obviously is going to get the big talk. Who is your pick to win defensive rookie of the year, and who is your sleeper pick?
So I was going through it, and obviously, like, a favorite's going to be Will Anderson. I didn't do Will Anderson for a specific reason, which we'll talk about later. So my pick for defensive rookie of the year is actually the Commanders' first-round pick, Emmanuel Forbes. I think, as much as we kind of hate it, these, you know, end of year awards are very, very much influenced by the box scores. I think Forbes has an opportunity to, you know, start from day one. That's the expectation, is that it'll be an outside cornerback on a pretty good defense, a defense that expects to finish within the top 5 to 10 in most categories, a defense that struggled to create turnovers last year, but can, you know, hurry the quarterback, make the quarterback feel like he's out of time, rush his process a little bit. And Forbes has the instincts, the athletic ability, and the ball skills to put up some pretty gaudy production numbers. And while I don't think that he's going to be the best cornerback or the best defensive rookie, that's not always the requisite for being the defensive rookie of the year. I think if he's you know, and put in a position where he leads all cornerbacks and tackle, well, all rookie cornerbacks and tackles and interceptions, and he, you know, gives us a pick six or two. He's got an opportunity to put up a lot of box score numbers, and I think that's going to play into defensive rookie of the year hype, especially if the Commanders are in that, you know, 500 race or 500 level to wild card race.
For sure. This one's always a tough one because it's like, all right, who is going to control the narrative? And obviously from probably from the first couple games, we knew Sauce Gardner was probably going to win defensive rookie of the year. We have such a good corner class. I'm going to go Christian Gonzalez from New England. And to me, it came down to edge or defensive back. And when I look at the edges that got drafted and some of the particular landing spots, like, you know, after like Will Anderson, like Tyree Wilson, you're just like, I don't know if Lucas Van Ness is going to have the snaps to do it.
Murphy went later than we thought. Yeah, Nolan Smith barely landed in the first, and Philly's loaded. No, 100%.
Yeah, so it was a little bit tough, but I think, you know, Gonzalez specifically, look at the division they're playing in. I mean, God. Stephon Diggs, Jalen Waddle, Tyreek Hill all in that division. Obviously, Garrett Wilson too. Yeah. He's going to get tested a lot. So I think it's going to give him an opportunity to, you know, at least have make plays on the football. And it was something that he specifically wanted to improve in his final season, and he did that. So I'm going to go Christian Gonzalez. I think he gets, you know, four or five picks as a rookie and really makes an impact for New England. But this was a tough one because, like, to me, it's like, your heart tells you he's probably going to be an edge rusher, but then it's like you look at the list of the players they had drafted. It's a deep edge class, but we don't know who's going to, you know, after like Anderson and Tyree Wilson, it's like who's going to play enough snaps to qualify.
Yeah, and that, I think – tough part. And like you said with the, you know, edge rushers, the landing spots aren't great. Well, I think the cornerbacks is kind of the inverse. Seattle takes Devin Witherspoon. That's a great place for him to get an opportunity to make plays, both at the line of scrimmage and with the balls in the air. And especially with the year that Tariq Woolen had last year, quarterbacks aren't going to want to test him as much. They know that he's, you know, a walking interception if you give him the opportunity. So they're going to throw it at Witherspoon, who's probably a better quarter than Woolen. Don't tell Seahawks fans, but they, you know, that's a real thing that might, you know, he's not going to produce as many interceptions, but if we're talking about just pure coverage skills, like that's that dude. So I think he was, you know, obviously Forbes, I talked about his fit and what they like doing, you know, in that kind of Josh Norman off ball role where you just kind of get to use your instincts and make plays on the ball. We talked about Deontay Banks and his, you know, the perfect fit with Wink Martindale. And so, yeah. And then Christian Gonzalez, obviously New England loves that number one lockdown cornerback, whether it's J.C. Jackson, Stephon Gilmore, go back literally 25 years of Bill Belichick always having a good cornerback or CB1 that they didn't have, you know, this past year. So I do think that Christian Gonzalez is also put in that spot. One guy that I do think, and you know, we already talked about Will Anderson, so I won't consider him an honorable mention, but everyone memed the pick, and rightfully so, but Jack Campbell is probably going to make plays for Detroit, right? If you're spending the 18th overall pick on him, you're going to want him on the field a bunch. If dude has 130 tackle season with like three sacks and two interceptions and two forced fumbles, you know, just a standard starting linebacker box score sheet, people are gonna like you. People are gonna think, oh, this is a rookie who came in and was, you know, one of the 15 most productive linebackers in the NFL. This deserves defensive rookie of the year hype. So I do think he'll probably get some too.
Yeah, I would definitely watch out for that as well. I mean, especially with him going that high, they're planning on starting him immediately. So. Yeah,
like what if he leads the league in tackles? Like I'm sure people would vote for him for defensive rookie of the year.
Oh yeah, it'll definitely be, you know, a big, you know, kind of push for him to do so. For my sleeper, I'm gonna go Jair Brown for the 49ers. He's in this kind of the same, kind of thinking in terms of like, all right, he's going to play safety. He's probably going to play deep safety for the 49ers as well. It's going to be opportunities for him, I think, to make some plays on the ball. That defensive line is crazy. I could see several scenarios where the quarterback's getting hit as he's throwing and it just kind of falls into his lap. And I think he's going to be a high volume tackler as well. I think, I mean, obviously you got Fred Warner on that defense, Nick Bosa, so many good players, Javon Hargrave added to the mix. But I would watch out for, you know, the secondary is kind of in flux a little bit. They're going to test probably their corners especially. So I think it's going to give them some opportunities to make some plays on the ball on the deep thirds and halves. So he's a guy to me as a potential sleeper in terms of doing so. I'll also consider Jordan Battle as well as a potential sleeper pick as well, because I think those guys are going to be high volume. Bring them down into the box in the run game to also be that extra fit. And if they have the stats to do so, I could certainly see, especially both of them being on playoff teams, Battle on the Bengals, in Brown on the 49ers. I could see the push for them as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Niners moved up for Brown, so you know they have an idea or a role for him. And the Bengals lost literally all of their safeties in free agency, so Battle's going to literally get to play wherever the Bengals want him to. So, yeah, both of those guys definitely have an opportunity to produce a ton this year.
All right, flipping to the offensive side of the ball. Obviously, the most popular pick is going to be Bijan to be Offensive Rookie of the Year. But who's your pick to be the Offensive Rookie of the Year in the 2023 season?
Well, similar to MVP, as far as I'm concerned, this is a quarterback award. And it's, to me, it's going to end up, like, obviously Bijan's going to be great, but I don't think the Falcons are going to be great. So maybe, like, the Bijan hype brings it in. But the parallels between Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud's, like, rookie seasons are both pretty interesting. Fresh rebuild, year one. A lot of encouraging moves made for, like, both the Panthers and the 49ers between, you know, Frank Reich and that offensive staff that the Panthers have put in. They drafted Icky, Icky to be that left tackle, that blindside protector, brought in Jonathan Mingo. And then on the inverse with the Texans, they went out and got the, you know, San Francisco tree, bringing that Kyle Shanahan lineage to fill out that coaching staff. And they added pass catchers. They added offensive line help. You know, they traded for Shaq Mason and extended him, went out and grabbed Dalton Schultz. So I think there's a lot of similarities between these guys. And the biggest one is they both play in crappy divisions. There's the Jaguars are the best team among the eight teams in these two divisions, the NFC South and the AFC South. And so I think there's a legitimate chance that both of these teams could at least flirt with a playoff push, or at least, you know, maybe be in that week 15, 16 race of trying to still fight for a chance to be in that dance at the end of the year. And so I'm going to roll with who my QB1 is. I'm going to roll with CJ Stroud. I like the things around him that make me comfortable. I love the tackles and bringing in Shaq Mason. Obviously, I'm glad they still have Laremy Tunsil. You have a receiving core that's young, but I think there's a lot of talent in it, or at least there's quality NFL bodies and players. You can go and get an elite number one guy at some point next year, but I'm going to roll with CJ Stroud. They have that running game with Damian Pierce heading it. So I think, you know, Offensive Rookie of the Year is a quarterback award. I'm going to roll with the quarterback. I'm going to roll with the quarterback that I had at the top of my board.
Yeah, I can't, you know, discount that for sure. But I'm going to go another quarterback in this division. I'm going to go Anthony Richardson to win Rookie of the Year. And I think it, to me, he gets the edge, assuming that he starts from day one and they're like, they just, you know, let him roll from day one. Obviously, if not, it gets a little bit more complicated. But as we saw, you know, Brock Purdy won Offensive Rookie of the Year. He didn't even play like half the season. So I'm going to go with Richardson because I think they're going to let him run the ball and run the ball quite a bit. Like, I know they want to protect their investment, but I think they're going to unleash his running game. And like, we've seen what defenses have, how defenses have adjusted to like Lamar Jackson and his running ability, what Cam Newton did back in the day. But like, every time we get like a guy that's like a dual threat talent, defenses just never know how to defend them. And I think because he's going to be the true kind of blend of size, athleticism, power and speed, I think they're going to have a difficult time corralling him in the pocket. So I think he's going to put up, I don't think they're going to be good, but I think he's going to put up a lot of stats, a lot of total touchdowns, especially when they get near the goal line, going to be running a lot of QB sneaks and, you know, QB run type plays. So I could see him racking up 20, 25 total touchdowns. And they're like, okay, we just got to give it to this guy. Even if Stroud and Young both put up some really good numbers, I expect, you know, them to really settle in and especially look better, you know, as passers. But I think with combined with Richardson's running ability, I feel like it's the war was made for a type of player of his skill set to succeed and win that type of award as a rookie.
Do you think he rushes for 1,000 yards if he starts 17 games?
I don't think so. I think he does. See him getting like 700, 800. Because I just feel like the first like 3-4 games, he's going to go crazy. Like he's just going to have absurd rushing numbers. Like,
and teams are just going to.
And then he's going to start dipping off a little bit. And they're going to sell out to make sure he doesn't do it. So
make him beat him as a passer.
Yeah. So I think that's how it's going to go. It also really depends on like how, I mean, it could go the other way where he just, they're selling out for Jonathan Taylor. That's another factor too. I don't think he'll get 1,000 yards rushing, but I wouldn't be surprised if we roll towards the end of the season. He's getting close to it.
Have they released a season line?
Probably.
I wonder if they've released a season line, rookie betting lines. Because I wonder what if they already have his like rushing lines and stuff. It doesn't look like they do.
Yeah, it might be another month or two.
Yeah, that would be really interesting. Because and I guess that's hard too because you don't know if it's going to be him or Gardner, but. I know I could absolutely see him just have like video game numbers, even if like the passing efficiency is not there, just the raw total volume.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see that happening. But we'll see. I mean, like I said, it really depends on if they want to unleash him from day one or they want to kind of wait it out. And I could see them going either way at this point. It's still too early to tell. But in terms of sleeper picks, who do you have that, you know, maybe a non-quarterback that you could see winning the award?
Yeah, well, obviously we've talked about Roshan. I think there's a good chance. Obviously, Bijan is the big guy that we love to talk about. I also really like the idea of Jaxon Smith-Njigba just because he was, like, comfortably my top receiver. And I think if there's a Lockett or DK injury, that he's going to get a chance to really show that he is the top pass catcher in this class. And then the only other one that I think really has a decent shot would be a guy like Hunter Henry, who could just kind of be that, or sorry, not Hunter Henry. Literally do this every single time. Michael Mayer, the alliteration, the whatever. Michael Mayer to be, you know, that tight end one in Vegas. We know what McDaniels likes to do with that tight end. So I think he'll be a nice little outlet, a guy who puts up like 750 and seven. And if the quarterback's underwhelm and, you know, Bijan's not the end all be all and Michael Mayer is just a productive tight end, then maybe he kind of sneaks his way in there. Probably would have to put up more than 750 and seven now that I think about it, but maybe it's like 950 and nine and or 950 and 12. And he's a big time run blocker.
For sure. Another name I thought about was Jordan Addison for the Vikings. I think he has a decent shot. I don't know. My confidence level is probably like a 5 on that. Just because, you know, Justin Jefferson is going to command most of the targets. They also got TJ Hockenson as well. So it's going to be depending on how quickly he picks up the game. I think he's going to pick it up pretty quickly. And how creative they get with moving him around. But I could see him really burst on the scene, especially in the second half of the season. Once he's comfortable in the offense, he's starting to carve out a really nice role. But the receivers, I could see him or Jaxon Smith-Njigba, but I can't really see any other receivers right now at this point. It's hard to tell
if
he's going to have an early role or not, but just based on the fact that they were taking that high. And obviously, Quentin Johnson has a small chance too, but I don't see him being like a 1,000-yard receiver right off the bat. Either. So I would say probably Addison for me is my sleeper pick for that.
Yeah, of the first round receivers, I think Addison has the easiest path to targets. I do think JSN and Quentin Johnston kind of enter camp as de facto wide receiver threes. Like there's not much competition there. They're probably not going to beat someone out to be the number two or number one guy in those offenses. And then with Zay Flowers, it's kind of the Baltimore thing where it's like, what the hell is going to happen? We have no idea. And then with Addison, it's like, yeah, that's wide receiver two because the alternative is KJ Osborne. So we're like, yeah, that guy, even if, you know, TJ and Justin Jefferson get 70% of the targets, he's still probably going to get a pretty big majority of those 30% left. And then I think outside of round one for the receivers, I think Jonathan Mingo's probably got the best chance to just kind of be huge target guy, come in with Bryce Young, get some chemistry with him in training camp or in rookie camp. They don't have a bunch of talent surrounding him right now. So I think Mingo's got a really, really good chance to kind of just be Carolina's de facto big body wide receiver one and have a good ability to create a chemistry with Young, especially with that head start he has on everybody else already on that roster.
Yeah, that's another good one as well. Someone to watch as well, too, as we get ready for the...
And Paris Johnson Jr., he's going to be the best performing offensive rookie this year. He's not going to get votes, but he locked that
one in. Day, though, they'll get the offensive rookie of the year to a tackle because Tristan Wirfs definitely should have won his year.
You're preaching. You're preaching.
But we'll see, man. Maybe.
Whoops, I apologize. They heard it, too.
Yeah, they definitely agree. All right, as we wrap up the show here, some 2024 talk, just some preliminary stuff. I know you've been diving into some of the 2024 tape early on. Who are some players you've gotten to watch and just give us a quick synopsis of, you know, what you learned or things you noticed so far early scouting in 2024?
Yeah, so the three completed ones I have so far for summer scouting are Caleb Williams, Drake May, Oluwamu Fashanu. I'm pretty close, probably like 70% done on both of the Notre Dame tackles. So we'll probably talk about them for the next episode, but both are really, really good. This tackle class is phenomenal because I've heard a ton of great things about the Alabama kid and Corey loves the Georgia kid. So that's five guys right there that, you know, I have a lot of trust in the people who are telling me these are good players. So, you know, who knows, but Fashanu, stud. Actually, I probably should have been prepared and pulled up my scouting report, so I have like offhand things to say, but the pass pro just, and obviously we knew this from last year, but just going over it again, specifically like rewatching the Ohio State game, I was what they got really, really wanted to do. But the pass protection pacing, the creating his depth, but not going too far into it, right? He's not kick stepping 5 yards back if there's no defensive end gaining ground on him, but he's not, you know, undersettling if, you know, a guy's right here, but he's not making contact. It's a perfect balance of knowing where to keep his body in between the rusher and the quarterback. The hands are really good. And then just with the Caleb May and, or the Caleb Williams and Drake May stuff, I know it was a little bit talked about on the timeline. May's really, really good. And I don't want my people to think that my tweets are a disdain for May. He's a really, really fun player to watch. The tools are just, to me, like non-comparable. I think the arm's good. I think the rushing ability is good. I think where he's better than Caleb is something that's pretty easily developed. It's playing in that structure. It's playing in rhythm. It's kind of being a little bit more methodical than just making all the plays happen. But we know that in the NFL, it is the off-script stuff. It is the plays that most people can't make. It's the instant reaction. It's the, let me put this ball here because that's the only place my wide receiver can catch it. And while I think Drake May does have, you know, that off schedule stuff, and he's more than capable of making plays out of the pocket and out of structure, I think that Caleb Williams is like generational at it. Is, you know, when scouts are saying, oh, he's the closest thing we've gotten to Patrick Mahomes since Patrick Mahomes, it's like half of me is like, oh, you guys suck because you hated Patrick Mahomes. Like you took him at 10. You took Solomon Thomas and Mitchell Trubisky and Jamal Adams in the top five, and Patrick Mahomes fell to 10. So let's not act like the NFL loved him. But as far as a prospect who does the stuff that Pat does at the NFL level, it really is Caleb. And people have talked about the height. I really don't think it's not like a Bryce Young thing where he's like 5'9". He might be 5'11". It is what it is. Bryce Young also didn't have the same arm or the same butt or the athletic, just the athletic tools are ridiculous, like insane. The arm is crazy. The ball placement's really, really good. There's a ton of stuff to work on, but I don't really blame him for the, you know, the narrative is that he's not great in structure or that he has to kind of just make plays happen. He kind of just stands behind, you know, a pretty big pocket, but USC sucks, bro. Like, yeah, watching that offense was terrible. Like, nobody gets open. There's a reason Jordan Addison, all of his – people talk like, oh, Jordan Addison didn't create separation like he did at Pitt at USC. That's not his fault. It's because
– yeah, nobody else did.
Yeah, Lincoln – I don't know what Lincoln Riley's doing, or I guess, you know, maybe just defenses caught on. But, yeah, like, watching the tape specifically, especially against Utah, like, it was really prevalent. Like, Utah just had his number where they just knew exactly what was going to happen, where each receiver was going to end up, and there was just nowhere to throw the ball to. So he had to run around to create chaos to then create openings. And I think that ability is so special, and his specifically is so transcendent that's why he's been such a productive and dominant player. And I think it's just going to translate easy. And I know it's May and it's 2023 and the draft's not till next April, but like, throw down your money on Caleb Williams, first overall pick, as soon as you see odds that you like.
Yeah.
People said it about Bryce Young going into last year. Then it was like, oh, is Bryce Young going to be this dude? People said it about CJ Stroud going into last year. You know, those are the top two quarterbacks. We go through this draft process of AR and Will Levis and Reddit, and who were the first two quarterbacks taken?
It always happens.
That's every what I'm year. Saying.
I mean, obviously there are some years where it shouldn't happen that way. I mean, we know with the Fields and Trevor Lawrence draft, it should have happened that
should've
way.
Should have been Fields.
But – you know, but yeah, I agree with everything you said, man. I watched like the USC game, like 8 of the 12 or 13 games, USC mm-hmm. games live. You're just like, all right, this dude he's the first pick. It's like,
yeah,
just ridiculous. I'm excited to like actually dive in and do so. But I start with receivers first. I went with Antoine Wells Jr. from South Carolina, receiver. He's actually someone that's been on my radar for a couple years now. Because I was watching the FCS playoffs a couple years ago, and he was tearing up with James Madison, ended up with 15 touchdowns and almost 1,300 yards receiving. And it kind of caught on to South Carolina with Spencer Rattler. He became their number one guy last year, even though they had Jaheim Bell and other weapons on that offense. He actually had more yards than the next two receivers combined on their roster. Just to show you how wide the discrepancy is. But he's a really smooth player. He's not like overly explosive or overly sudden. But to me, I felt like he was a good, really good route runner, had a nice feel of, you know, how to attack press man coverage, finding the holes in zone coverage, just finding holes downfield and never kind of letting the plays die. I found like every time Spencer Rattler was scrambling out of the pocket, he was finding ways to create open lanes and allow him to throw him open and making himself available. He has a really nice post corner route, turns around DBs every time, and he has inside out ability too. They throw him in the slot occasionally. He plays outside receiver in the boundary. And I think he was just overall solid player. To me, I'll probably give him a round 3 grade just based off of summer scouting and just kind of going more so just by day. So he'd be like a mid-day 2 grade for me. But I felt he was really solid, really solid all-around player that really came on strong the final last couple games. Had a monster game against Clemson. Also had a really nice game against Tennessee. Towards the end of the season when South Carolina started to find their stride. And has some really arrogant hands. Like, he catches everything thrown this
way. I was going to say, I feel like, because I watched a little bit of Rattler recently when there was like, when Ryan Roberts tweeted about the like arm ability or the arm strength in college football and all the quarterbacks. So I wanted to like, just to re-familiar myself with everyone's tools prior to tweeting out what I thought. And I was going to say, yeah, I do remember just like the at the catch point specifically, him coming down with everything with Rattler.
Yeah. Yeah. He's really, really good in contested catch situations. I didn't like that a lot of his catches were contested and he didn't create a ton of separation. So something to watch going into next season, but was really impressed with his skill set, his size. He's like 6'1", 210. So decent size. We'll see kind of how he shapes out. But, I mean, he was first team all SEC last year. Really good receiver for South Carolina. I really like him and like his game. And then right before we start recording, I finished up Will Shepard, Vanderbilt receiver. Another really interesting player, a bit bigger, 6'3", 200 pounds, skinny frame. I thought at times he released really well off the line of scrimmage, you know, really uses his body well at the catch point, had a nice couple catches downfield against Georgia and Alabama in traffic and one-on-one with Kool-Aid McKinstry from Alabama as well. Has some concentration drops throughout the tape for sure. I mean, there were just times where he was catching the ball away from his frame, extending and doing so, but then other times he lay against his body and just dropped it. So one thing I want to see is him clean up his drops for sure, but he's going to be a really nice red zone threat, especially in the 23 season. Uses his big body well, understands, you know, the areas of the field he can win at. Not a natural separator, although he does have some separation ability and has some acceleration too. So another guy to me is probably in that day two, day three area in terms of receiver wise, but just two guys I wanted to check off the list. Working through some SEC receivers, going to do Malik Nabers next from LSU. So excited to check him out, but wanted to get into some receivers and get some names down before I get to obviously Marvin Harrison Jr., Buka, you know, the top names in the receiver.
So you mentioned him, and I haven't done any, like, it's all off of live. This is completely off of just live viewing and impressions that I've gotten over, you know, the first 2 years of his career. But I really think Marvin Harrison is just probably going to be my highest rated receiver ever. Like, just gut instinct, like the production, the size, the athletic tools, the polish that you get from Ohio State. And this year we're going to get to see him with a crappy quarterback potentially, how he does. Like, that'll be good for his – at least it's not like – oh, well, he played in this Ohio State offense, or he played with this or whatever. Like, there, it really will just be kind of a foolproof. And I think, like, there's a chance that he is just, like, the best receiver prospect we've had since, like, Calvin.
Yeah.
Obviously, I could just be super off base, and we'll see super early, like we've said. But that's just, like, kind of the vibe that he gives me.
Yeah, I mean, I got to watch him in person in the semifinal game. And he was, I mean, he was the best player on the field, and we're talking about players that win the first round, and Jalen Carter obviously on the field, CJ Stroud as well, you know, second overall pick. It's just crazy to me because it's like he just did it so effortless.
Yeah,
everything about his game is just like effortless. Like, you know, it's just, you know, so technically sound in terms of how he stems guys. Every route he runs is always full speed. I never feel like, you know, you can tell, like, receivers know, like, the ball's not coming to him. Like, you literally can't tell with him.
Yeah.
It's just like every rep he runs is like.
And I think it's because. Yeah. And he has that kind of pro mentality, which you get from Ohio State and you get from being Marvin Harrison's kid, you know, where it's kind of just like, you know, in the NFL, you have to run routes like you're going to get the ball because quarterbacks move off their progression. So you will get the ball, right? Just because you're the first read doesn't mean you're getting the ball every time on that route or even close to every time. And so you're spot on. It's effortless for him. And it's what's concerning for the rest of the world is that it's effortless for him at 6'4", 210 pounds or whatever he is, right? With, you know, probable 4.39, 40 incoming or whatever. Like, it's just, it's terrifying.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's gonna be interesting because, like, you talked about Fashanu, you talked about Caleb Williams. I feel like those three are just like in a different area code in terms of, like, you know, like, I know the tackle class is gonna be really talented. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously quarterback with May and Williams, and then receiver class is gonna definitely have more than. I won't say more definitely, but certainly seems like we're going to have more first round potential receivers, at least.
Or high level, like no one went till 20, right? So guys who could go in the top 10 or 15.
Right. But it just feels like those three names are just so.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't have them at the top of their position, at least from summer.
Early. Yeah,
like,
I agree.
You know, what are we doing here? You know? So they'll be interesting to watch. But yeah, Harrison, I agree with you. I think he could be. I don't like throwing the word generational, but I think he's generational.
Completely agree. No, I completely agree.
I think he's just – you just don't get a dude that size, that runs that route. I mean, like, even like Calvin was just so dominant. Like, I don't think, like, imagine like Calvin, like, having the route running skill that he had.
Yeah, Calvin. Yeah, Calvin coming out really was just like the most gifted person, right? Like, he was just like, you just looked at him and was like, yeah, are we even the same species? But, you know, Marvin Harrison, like, you can tell he's just been playing wide receiver for 20 years and he's 20 years old.
Yeah. But we'll definitely have a lot more 2024 talk this summer as we now move into the 2024 class. Thanks, Matt, for joining me today on today's episode. Anything you want to add before we wrap up here?
I don't think so. I hope everyone's going to enjoy their summer. We'll be here with the summer scouting talks. I'll make sure to wrap up those Notre Dame tackles so we can talk about them next time. But, you know, I hope everyone stays safe and enjoys the warm weather.
For sure. You can follow him at MV Scouting on Twitter. You can follow me at RealD_Jackson. Follow Corey on Twitter at FakeCorey. That's a weird one to say, but once the check marks were lifted, he changed out. Special happy birthday to him as well.
Probably a
big reason he was not on the podcast today. It'll be past his birthday when you guys are hearing this. But special happy birthday to Corey as well. I hope he's enjoying his time off. But next time it'll be all three of us talking 2024 scouting. And getting fully into summer scouting as we prepare for the next draft class. But until next time, I'm Devin, that's Matt, and this is the Daft on Draft Podcast.